Monster Energy. Everybody knows White Monster, Zero Ultra. That's the OG. It kicked off this whole zero sugar energy drink thing. But Ultra is a whole lineup now. You've got Strawberry Dreams, Blue Hawaiian, Sunrise, and Vice Guava. And they all bring the Monster Energy punch. So if you've been living in the white can, branch out. Ultra's got a flavor for every vibe. And every single one is zero sugar. Tap the banner to learn more.
On this episode of Inside Boxing Live, we break down a wild weekend of boxing. We went into this weekend thinking it could be okay. Ended up exceeding expectations. That's why you tune in. Chris was there ringside in New York City for that matchroom card. There were some fights on Friday night that we got to talk about. Some controversy, some big fights being made in the women's boxing. Let's get into it. What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of Inside Boxing Live. This is a product of John Boy Media. I am Dan Canobio. He is Chris Algieri, well-traveled, literally just landed in Florida, back from New York, on the call, Madison Square Garden, Hulu Theater, for what was an historic night of boxing in the women's divisions. Undisputed all over the place, good fights. There were some fights Friday night. Chris, how are you? And how was the traveling? And tell us about New York.
I'm good. I'm a little haggard, if you can't tell. I think I got some bags under my eyes. It's a late night calling fights and traveling early. Yeah. And New York was absolutely freezing. Whatever a polar vortex is, it's cold. It was very, very cold there. Like, we're talking like single digits, 6, 7, 8, 9 degrees.
We love talking weather at the beginning of the show.
We always do. My face is chapped from being out there. I'm not made for the cold anymore, man.
But dude, I was upstate.
Good to be back over here.
I was upstate seeing the lady, minus 10. Mm-mm. I never felt that in my life.
That's not a number. What does that mean? What do you mean minus? 10. Minus what? What does that mean?
Did you see up in Mount Washington in New Hampshire? It was the coldest temperature ever recorded in U.S. history. Minus like 110 or something.
Oh, Jesus. Come on. Your breath is going to freeze into icicle.
You die the minute you step out there. What happened over at MSG? Anything? Any good stories? You worked with Shackle. Saw some familiar faces, I'm sure. You called a lot of fights, man. You were on the air for a long time.
Yeah, we had a four-hour call, Shackle and I. Thank God I was with Shackle, because he is a consummate professional.
He's so good.
And so good. He's got such a great voice. He calls like he does his homework. So I wasn't worried about the long call with him. But no, it was good. It was a good night of fights. It's always great to be in the Hulu Theater. Shackle and I reminiscing. He's like, you fought here before? I'm like, yeah, a bunch of. I'm like, I fought here. And I just remembered, I was like, I fought there like 18 months ago. It wasn't even that long ago. Yeah. It was my fight with Lipierre for on Triller. It was cool walking in the guts and seeing all the commissioners and everybody, you know, just seeing my New York people. It's always a pleasure.
Star-studded night. I mean, you had a lot. Shakur Stevenson was there. Gerberlanga was there. I think every top 10 female fighter was there. That's pretty cool.
I actually had to get Shakur Stevenson into the building. I was going outside before the bell call, and he's sitting outside with his lady, and I'm like, man, what are you doing? He's like, oh, they won't let me in. I'm like, it's 5 degrees outside. I go to the security guards. I'm like, yo, you gotta let this guy at least stand inside. He's like, oh, yeah. I can't do that. I'm like, yes, you can. Trust me. It's 5 degrees outside. Yeah, it's Shakur Stevenson's a world champion. Like,
no, MSG. Those MSG security guards don't mess around, man.
Nah, they're rough.
Dolan on Dolan. James Dolan was there, owner of the Knicks and the Rangers and the MSG. I saw him. He went from the Garden because the Knicks were playing upstairs, blew a nice lead. The Knicks, of course, came down, and then I saw Dolan there. But yeah, they don't mess around. Like, but Shakur was there, Berlanga. I mean, he's taken a lot of meetings these past couple weeks, and then you had almost every female fighter of note: Sunisa Estrada, Clarissa Shields. I saw Sula Rubino was there. Yeah, that's the cool thing about women's boxing, because it seems like there's a really good sorority. I wouldn't say it's a fraternity, a sorority of sisters together. They all support each other. I even seen Terry Harper tweet that she is a fan of Alicia Bumgarner. If you can rewind back, Alicia Bumgarner stopped Terry Harper to bring her to where she is today. But we'll get into that card first. You were on the calls from the beginning of the night on. There was a lot of fights on that before the bell card. And then everything culminated with the main event. Amanda Serrano and Erica Cruz. Good God. I mean, that was, I think Lou DiBella tweeted, this was a the Gotti Ward of women's boxing. It kind of was. I mean, Amanda Serrano wins. She really earned it. Becomes the first Puerto Rican fighter, male or female, to become undisputed in the four-belt era. How about this, Chris? 1,917 combined punches thrown. That is a record. Wow. That is the most ever thrown in a women's fight. 459 combined landed punches, second most in a women's fight. Both Serrano and Cruz threw the most punches individually in the history of women's boxing. Keep in mind, those are two-minute rounds. So to throw close to 1,000 punches in two-minute rounds, 10 rounds, is unbelievable. Mixing back and forth, that headbutt, which changed the course of the fight. Erica Cruz, I mean, if you don't know who she is now, she's on the scene in a big way. Serrano is a beast. I mean, she showed that she still has that gas tank. There are other things that are slipping due to just age. But what were your overall impressions of an absolute war?
You know, I expected it to be a good fight. Cruz is no joke. You know, she's Mexican. She comes forward. First round looked scary. Looked like she didn't really want to fight. It looked like it was going to be a Serrano blowout. And in the second round, she comes out and she's just like, you know what? I'm here. I can do it. I can deal with her power. I think that's what it was. She's feeling out the power. And she's like, oh, I can deal with her power. And then she just made it a barn burner from there on out. Just letting both hands go, any chance she got. Awesome body work throughout, which I think was really important for Cruz to get to the body early with Serrano. Get that little bit, sap that gas tank a little bit, take the power punching away from her somewhat so she could take those shots down the line. Then you got that wicked headbutt and that cut where I'm surprised Serrano didn't get cut worse when they clashed heads because she got hit in the eye, but and her was Cruz's her forehead. Oh, man. I mean, bleeding throughout, blood and guts type of fight, nonstop punching. Serrano, as you alluded to, definitely seeing some erosion of the skills. She was getting hit a lot. She could not see the right hand, the right hook coming at all. Possibly because it's a southpaw. She hasn't really fought that many southpaws. Possibly just because of the aggression and the pressure from Cruz. But she got hit a lot to the body, and especially that right hook to the head upstairs. And that one punch power wasn't there. You know, I don't know if it's the weight class. I don't know if it's the age. But it made for a great fight, though, either way, because, I mean, Cruz really came, showed her all. I'd like to see her again as well.
Well, she got hit the most she's ever got hit in her career, Serrano. If you listened to last week's episode, we talked about, you know, she's getting hit more than she's ever has been, Serrano. Now this is 5 straight fights that have gone the distance. Listen, when I watch her fight, she's legendary. She's... Yeah. Very, very elite. She is one of the greatest to ever lace them up, female fighter. And obviously now she has the undisputed to go along with it. But she is human. You know, father time waits for no one. We're seeing signs of defensive slippage. We're seeing signs of a power slippage. Gas tank is still there. But you're seeing a long career, grind out fights, jump in different weight classes. That takes a toll on you too. She's now 34 years old, suffered a lot of bruises and cuts in that fight herself.
After a lot of money now too.
Yes, which is what you do. Which is why you grind those early years. And now she's finally seeing the fruits of her labor right now at age 34. But after the fight, you know, she's brought in, Katie Taylor's brought into the ring, and they announced that they will be fighting on May 20th in Dublin. And my first reaction is, wow, that is a quick turnaround. That is a very, very quick turnaround for such a grueling fight for Serrano. Mm-hmm. And the fact that she is getting hit a lot, the fact that the power, which she's been known for, I think she's going to have a tough – I think she's looking like an uphill battle against Katie Taylor, who is no spring chicken either, 35 years old. Who knows how many fights Katie Taylor has left. But that was my first reaction when they put the two in the ring. It's like, damn, that fight, that's a quick turnaround for Serrano, who's showing, obviously, is still amazing. Like, come on, throwing that many punches, and her gas tank is incredible, and she's still one of the best women boxers in the game right now. But that's going to be a tough test for Serrano against Katie Taylor.
Yeah, and she has to go up 2 weight classes. Well, I don't know why no one even talks about that. Like, she's fought at 26 this weekend. She's got to go fight Katie Taylor at 35.
Right, hopping right over Bumgarner.
2 full weight classes to fight the pound for pound best female fighter in the world, you know, in a few short months. So I don't know. People, I think because their first fight was so epic at 35, and then immediately after she drops down to 26, you forget that she jumps weight classes. Like, it's almost no big deal, but it's still a big deal. It still matters, you know, that she's fighting in different weight classes. She's not in her ideal weight class fighting the biggest fight of her career. And like you said, coming off a blistering fight, a damaging fight. Yeah, quick turnaround. But listen, chase that paper when it's there, because opportunity does not knock a lot.
You got to do it. That's what makes women's boxing great, is like, they understand the moment. The promoters understand the moment. There isn't a lot of other options out there. You got to get that money while you can. Like, I don't see how the second fight can possibly live up to the first fight, unless there's like knockdowns on multiple sides here. And that could definitely happen. Like, Taylor could easily knock down Serrano in this fight, and vice versa. But like, I don't think the second fight is going to be as good as the first. I think the second fight is a fight for Katie Taylor's homecoming. I think it's a fight to make a lot of money, and it has to happen. We'll see what we get in the ring. It could end up being actually better because of the slippage and the defense. You know, what we saw as fighters get older, their defense starts to wane, and then you see a lot more offense. I mean, I think that's what Serrano is now at this point. We'll see how much Katie Taylor has left. But it did go the distance, Chris, and I did pick that for my parlay. I am red hot. 3-0 this year on parlays. I had Liam Wilson and Navarrete over 7.5 rounds that hit. I had Serrano decision, which I had to literally eke out, sweated that one out, because I thought that they were going to stop the fight because of the cut, and it might have been a TKO if it didn't go past a certain amount of rounds. And I also thought that Serrano might have been able to stop Cruz late. Cruz is superhuman. I don't know how she kept coming forward with those cuts on her head. But now I am 3-0 on the year. People are looking at my picks. They're asking, Dan, where is your parlay this week? But you also know what's coming up this week, Chris, is the Super Bowl. Are you ready for the biggest Sunday in sports? DraftKings Sportsbook is an official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 57. It has all the Super Bowl action you need. New customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get in on Super Bowl 57 excitement with DraftKings Happy Hour Super Boosts. Check the DraftKings Sportsbook app every day between 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern to see what prop bet will be boosted. I'm going with the Chiefs. I hate the Eagles. I would never pick the Eagles. I don't care if I have to lose a bet. I'm red hot in boxing. I don't know. I'll lose a bet not to pick the Eagles, but I'm going with the Chiefs in this one. I'm also going to take a look at some of these prop bets. Those are fun, like coin toss and, you know, who will score first and all that. What's your pick for the Super Bowl?
I'm going Birds.
Why?
Go Birds. Because you don't want them to win.
Did you see they lit up the Empire State Building green and white?
Yeah, that was not a good look.
Apparently they're going to do that again if the Eagles win.
Come on,
we don't need that in New York. We don't need that. So
New York has been disappointing me a lot lately.
Yes,
I love, you know, it's I'm homegrown, but man, come on.
Especially the sports scene's tough. Knicks losing all the time. Kyrie Irving just got traded.
We were looking good in the Super Bowl run. We had fucking New York teams. We were there. We're right there.
Right. That's why I cannot root for the Eagles under any circumstances. I'd rather see the Chiefs win. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code IBL. New customers can bet $5 on Super Bowl 57 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code IBL. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. So the rematch between Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano, May 20th in Dublin. No fight venue. Over the weekend, Conor McGregor started tweeting at Eddie Hearn saying, if you need help getting this fight at Croke Park, if it's a money issue, I will gladly sponsor it with my whiskey, proper 12, and all that. That was kind of fun.
Is he going to do a $500 million sponsor?
I think it was $500,000.
$500,000 sponsorship? That's a big sponsorship.
I think he just wants to get involved with it. He's obviously, you know, Katie Taylor is a friend of McGregor's. They're both from Ireland. This is a big deal for Katie Taylor to get that fight in Ireland.
Hey, Dan, so, we're friends, bro. I'm not spending $500,000 for you.
He gets the proper 12 out there. I get that. And he wants to be part of it. And McGregor's coming back, apparently, to fight Chandler.
Well, he's doing he's coaching the Ultimate Fighter season against my buddy Michael Chandler. So
I wish boxing had that. I wish boxing had an ultimate.
No, we tried. We tried. It didn't work.
The contender.
It's not our thing.
I wish
it doesn't work in boxing. So you know why it doesn't work in boxing? Because we're not team players. We don't have teams. So if you've not really been in MMA gyms, they're teams. They all train together. They all work together. You need partners. There's wrestling. Boxing's not like that. Boxing is dog eat dog. It can never work in boxing, in the way that it works in MMA, because there is not that camaraderie. There's not that team. Boxing is a lone wolf sport, and that just does not work for reality shows.
Different culture. I agree. Spending time on Long Island watching. At some of the gyms, the MMA gyms, there is a lot of tribalism between the teams. But that's the latest with Serrano and Taylor. I'm happy it's happening. Don't know what type of fight it will be because they're getting up there in age.
I do, but we're going to talk about that in the next coming weeks leading up to the fight. I'm not going to give you guys too much.
Producer Chris, you know, just teasing. That's a tease. Call that a tease.
I'm learning this trade. I'm getting good at this.
All right. Yeah. So Amanda Serrano is victorious. She becomes undisputed. We'll keep an eye on the fight with Taylor, which will be going down in May, at the end of May. That could be the same night as Haney Lomachenko, which I heard is having a little bit of issues. It hasn't been announced yet. A little bit of stalling out on there. But there's some big dates coming down. In the fall. April 16th is another big date in the boxing world. We could be getting Tank Ryan and Zhang versus Joyce on the same day.
Yes.
That's a fun day of boxing.
Yes.
Hopefully we're in Vegas for Tank Ryan and then we're at the bar watching Joyce Zhang before we get ready to watch Tank Ryan. Wouldn't that be an awesome day?
What is Zhang and Joyce on? Is that Matchroom? Where is that?
I think it's BT Sport. I think it's probably gonna be an ESPN Plus vehicle. It's my guess. So we'll be able to watch on our phones, our devices. And
I'm just wondering if I'm gonna be working any of those shows.
We'll see, Chris. You're in demand. You're back, baby.
I'm all over, baby. I'm all over.
You're everywhere. ProBox, ESPN.
Yeah, I'm doing four shows a month.
Kids got no time for the show. I hope you do have time for
that. That's not true. No, I make every week.
That's true. I lied. That was a big lie on my part.
Big lie.
Co-main event, Alicia Baumgartner. I got to get that right. She called me out on Twitter once for mispronouncing her name. Alicia Baumgartner versus Ellen Mekeled. This was the co-main event. Baumgartner dropped Mekeled early. I thought her timing looked great. Power looked good. She jabs to the body. She does not throw a lot of punches. They think we're starting to see what Baumgartner is all about. She's a lot like her male counterparts, Canelo Alvarez, Jermell Charlo, Javonta Davis types of fighters, where they throw about 30 punches a round. They have game-changing power, but they are going to give up rounds in their fights because they simply aren't active enough. And that was the case with Baumgartner and Mekeled. Mekeled was very tough. Baumgartner dropped her twice. Could have easily got her out of there, but it turned out later on she revealed why. Her gas tank wasn't quite there. She got a period. And that was my girlfriend was watching along with me. She did a double take when she heard that. So did Mannix, her entire team. I posted on Twitter. It is completely blown up on Twitter. A ton of women checking in saying that Alicia Baumgartner is my new favorite fighter. Besides the story, Alicia Baumgartner becomes undisputed at 130 pounds. She has a lot of options. What'd you think of that fight?
I'm a big fan of Alicia. I have been for a long time. First of all, I mean, obviously she can fight, but she's very, very sweet outside the ring too. She's a wonderful person.
Yes.
And she can really fight, and her personality is really showing now, which is great. She's getting a spotlight to be able to, you know, show what kind of person she is. She talks the talk. She fights the fight. She definitely showed some weaknesses come fight night, regardless of the menstruation talk. Listen, I've worked with a lot of fighters, female fighters, cutting weight and dealing with that. Listen, it happens. Every female fighter goes through that their entire career. So I don't know.
I thought it was a pretty interesting point from her. It's something you never think about for women's.
Well, that's my point. I do, because I've worked with so many female fighters over the years. Like, I know that's a big part of the sport, and so do they. That's not nothing new. That's not nothing new for her. She's definitely had fights and fight weeks where she was menstruating. That's nothing new. And listen, it matters. It definitely matters. But Katie Taylor's never mentioned that in a fight where she didn't do well. You know, like you don't have to mention that. Like it's like a fighter saying like, ah, I was under the weather this week. Yeah, you're in the weather a lot when you fight. I don't know. I don't.
A lot of fighters mention that though.
Yeah. Well, we all deal with it. Some guys do, some guys don't. Same thing with the women. All the women deal with that. Like every single woman has dealt with that in their career, and it gets mentioned very rarely. And I don't know. I don't know if you can really listen. She fought a very tough fighter. So let's not take away that and getting tired. Listen, it's not something new. She's got tired of fights before. She doesn't throw a lot of punches. Power punchers get tired.
Yeah.
She's a puncher, you know? So it's like you blow the gas tank out and then you have to recover. And she's very sound defensively. So she can lay and wait and just cover and check and see things and not throw those big power punches again. But to just tip your hat and be like, oh, it's because of that. All right. Well, because now when you lose in the fight and you say that, do we really care anymore? No. So I don't know. I'm not a huge proponent of using that as your crutch. And listen, I'm going to get raked over the coals to this because I've never experienced it. But I don't know. I just think that every female fighter has to deal with that. And it's just one of those things.
She actually threw 54 punches per round this fight. It's way up for Bumgarner. So she did show a good gas tank. She showed the power. Had a pretty wide discrepancy in power landed, 112 to 70. I think we texted about this. Like, I was a big proponent for 3-minute rounds.
Mm.
I think I'm like flip flopping on it now.
Because I 100% have.
Of it's a unique fight now. It's a unique like setting now. Women's boxing. The 20 minutes gives you such good action. Gives you such good back and forth. It allows it to be on TV more, which was Lou DiBella's biggest argument for 2-minute rounds, is that these networks and these promoters are more willing to put the fights on the air for 20 minutes because you can get a 20-minute bad fight. You know, I don't want to, like, Sky Nicholson's a friend of ours.
Yeah,
go ahead.
From a promoter's standpoint, they used to be cheaper. They're not cheap anymore. So even
they're definitely cheaper though than compared to men still.
Sure, but that gap is being bridged, and so promoters are going to be less likely to take that extra step. I mean, listen, they're selling now, so that's a whole new thing too.
They're selling. They're not getting paid extra though to fight. You know, an extra 16 minutes. You know, that was something I asked. I forgot which fighter I asked about that. And they said, well, are they going to start paying us more? No, they're not. So I think I'm a proponent for 20 minutes. I think it makes for the fights to be very unique. It makes them to have a whole different pace. They can be exciting, like this Serrano-Cruz fight, just like the Bumgarner fight. And the other side of things is sometimes, you know, the fights just aren't pretty and they aren't great. You know, Scott Nicholson's fight was very tough to watch. It wasn't an aesthetically pleasing fight because of the, you know, discrepancy in talent and just it just was. Imagine that being 36 minutes.
I would have liked that to be 1-minute rounds, if possible. That would have been a much easier call.
Can you imagine that being a 36-minute fight? Like that would not be good.
No. I thought we thought the 9 rounds was enough. We thought the fight was over. We were waiting for the fight to be over, and then it wasn't. And then it was like, oh, we got another round. Okay.
There were some men's fights that I wish weren't 36 minutes, not just the women's side, but they're the ones that they have the 2-minute rounds right now.
And I've said this in the past. There's a problem now because there's so many outlets. There are fights that are on TV that should not be on TV. I used to always say, if you see a guy on TV, and I said this to everyone growing up when I was a kid, and if you see a fighter on TV, they deserve to be there. You're seeing very good fighters and only good fighters. It's not like that anymore. You're seeing prospects knocking out cab drivers. You're seeing two people who should not be on TV fighting each other. And it's not good for the sport. I don't like where it's going in terms of that. It used to be you would only see the elites or at least the capables. We're not seeing that anymore. And that's an issue for the sport and for the networks. But I guess, you know, we're in the world of YouTubers fighting pay-per-view cards. So I understand, I guess.
No, it's something we've talked about on the show a lot too. It's the golden age of watching fights. There's so many, like, they have to fill so much content, like Richard.
Yeah, but we used to have tough mans. I like watching Tough Man, but I don't want to see a tough man for contest on a real card, a pro card.
What about our favorite guy that we like to always use in this example? Richard Torres fought again Friday night, blew the guy out, a former football player that had no right being in the ring with him. Like, that fight would never make it to TV like 10 years
ago.
We get to know about Richard Torres. I think, obviously, the fans want to see him in tougher fights, and he is a very interesting guy. It's a double-edged sword, it's like we always say. It's like, you don't need to see that, but it's also good for their, you know, building them up into an attraction. Last thing on Bumgarner and Mekhled. Bumgarner is now undisputed at 130. There's obviously a rematch with Michaela Mayer out there. Michaela Mayer was there in attendance. I think they are just playing just pride games. I think that if Michaela Mayer would have won the fight against Alicia Bumgarner, and she almost damn did. I mean, it was a very close fight. Would Bumgarner give, I mean, would Mayer give Bumgarner the rematch? I don't think so. Same reason why Bumgarner is not giving Mayer the rematch right away, despite them both very well knowing that that's the biggest, most amount of money they could make is with each other. It's like a pride thing. And I think that Bumgarner is like, well, I got your belts now, and you're going to have to wait. And Mayer's now going up to 130 or 135, not that that matters. What do you think's next for Bumgarner? Because there was talk about her potentially fighting the winner of Taylor and Serrano. That would be well down the line. And who knows if Taylor and Serrano have left after their fight. What's next for Bumgarner? Because I don't think there's anyone, you know, that off the top of my head at that weight class for her.
Well, I mean, she could. She's undisputed now. So that was, you know, she beat Michaela Mayer in the grudge match of her career. She wins that fight, which will probably turn into at least two fights, maybe three. But she gets her undisputed in this last fight, in a tough fight against a tough fighter. Does she get it? Does she get an easy touch now? Does she get a defense?
Probably.
You know, and probably. And then kind of see where the landscape is after that. So we're in February. We're looking at Serrano and Taylor fighting in the next couple months.
Yeah.
When we're looking at Michaela Mayer fighting Lynn Dattu.
Yeah. Good
in fight. The next couple months. Very tough. Listen, that's a tough fight. We're going to, we'll talk about that obviously when we get there. So she has a little bit of time. She just fought. She's got it undisputed. She can chill for a little bit. We'll see how the landscape's going to pan out with all those fights that happens. Because basically I'm looking at it, it's like almost like the four kings situation or queens at this point. And you've got Katie Taylor. You've got Amanda Serrano. You've got Michaela Mayer. And you've got Alicia Bumgarner. So you've got these four queens all around the weight classes that they can all fight each other. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of money there. And she's got all her belts at 130, and she can sit and wait and just see what kind of how that pans out, take a fight in between, get an easy one, and then go from there. But I think that would be the smart thing to do. But who knows? You know, you never know. Boxing is crazy. Like I said, Lynn Dattu fight is that's a real fight for Michaela.
Yeah, when you become undisputed, you have a lot of mandatories. You got a lot of these coming at you, trying to, you got to fight this person now. So, I can see
a lot of power, too, though. To take which fight you're going to take. You know, she's in the driver's seat for the first time in her career.
Right. Taylor and Serrano, I think, are in that part of their careers where they're just chasing the biggest money fights, as they should. A winner of Taylor Serrano fighting Bumgarner, who is the undisputed champ at 130, that's huge. That's another big fight, huge. And I'm sure they're going to want to take that because you can make a lot of money there. So that's something to keep an eye on, but Bumgarner does – in the next couple weeks or months, I do want to see her fight Mayer again. I think that they're just kind of kidding themselves right now. Mayer is practically begging for the rematch, and I think that Bumgarner understands that.
They're banging the cash register. They're smart. Yeah. that's all. They're banging the bill up, and that's like, you know, they and the two of them especially, because they can promote the fight and they can build the interest in the fight.
I just don't know how big it is here, though, in the States. Like, that fight took place in the UK. And it was on a card with Clarissa Shields and Savannah Marshall. Michaela Mayer does not sell tickets in the US. Like, her fight before Bumgarner in, I think it was like a hometown fight on ESPN, did not do well. Like, they definitely need each other, and it needs to be properly.
What is Mayer's hometown?
Like, somewhere in California.
Okay.
Did not do well. And Bumgarner has never really fought in her hometown or has really a home. A bunch of her fights were in the UK too. But she won her title against Terry Harper, and then the fight with Bumgarner, with Mayer was in the UK. And like, this is
and
like her first
last
fight
night's
back.
Crowd was for Serrano. That was Puerto Ricans in New York. Like that was a very, like, very pro Serrano, very pro Puerto Rican crowd.
We'll see. Well, that's why the promoters, they're
that's a good point, Dan. You know, you You think differently than me. I think like a fighter.
Yes.
You think like a promoter.
I think I have to think for the business side of what makes sense. And I know a little. I'm not saying I know a lot.
I'm just a dumb pug who knows the X's and O's.
Well, that's why, yeah, we need that. We need the balance. We need the balance mm-hmm. here. Friday night. Good gracious. Really good main event. Manuel Navarrete, Liam Wilson. This was a fight that we said leading coming up to. This could be a fun fight. We don't know much about Liam Wilson. I told you if you listened on to the last episode that he was a tall Aussie with a really good left hook. And he showed that. He actually dropped Navarrete in the fourth round. Controversy. Would not be a boxing event without a little bit of controversy. I tweeted this out. It's still being chatted about on my Twitter. Navarrete goes down in the fourth round. He hits the canvas. He is clearly hurt. Legs not there. He gets up, and his mouthpiece is out. And the count. He gets up at 8 or 9 and give him the 10 count. And then he has to go for the mouthpiece. Gets the mouthpiece. The referee doesn't wash it off. He puts it in his mouth. Then puts the mouthpiece in upside down. So therefore, he'll take it out, put it back in. All things after that. 27 seconds elapsed from when Navarrete hit the canvas to when the fight continued. And I know that Wilson hit him as he was going down. But from what I saw, and I haven't heard otherwise, the referee did not acknowledge that as an illegal blow. Because I saw some people tweeting me, well, what about the shot that Wilson hit him with? So Navarrete deserved 30 seconds. That's not how it worked. Like, in hindsight, yeah. But the referee did not – he did not let it be known that there was a late shot on it. So that point is moot to me. This is what happens in boxing all the time. It's not a 10 count. It is not 10 seconds. It's a 10 count. I understand that. But rarely do you ever see 30 seconds home cooking, I think. They want to never take it.
Yeah, no question. I mean, Navarrete was that was his show. He was the guy. I mean, you called it. You said the kid had a good left hook. I saw it right away in the first round. I'm like, ooh, that thing is that he whizzes that left hook, and he was throwing it at the right times and just missing Navarrete very early on. I'm like, well, he's gonna get him with that eventually. And as you alluded to on our last show, that Navarrete is not the best guy in terms of the footwork and defense, and he gets hit, and now he's in a new weight class with guys who are bigger than him. He's been bigger than everybody. He's been a weight bully for a while, even as he's moved up. Now, I don't think he can really do that. He still has power, obviously. He's still rough. He's still very talented. But he's not the weight bully that he was at 26 and 22. So now at 130, new weight class, you got a guy, big, long, strong, whizzing that left hook, catches him, puts him down, probably put him down for the count. But he gets the extra added time, survives, comes back to win the fight. I'm going to say it. We need a rematch. But is it going to happen? Absolutely not.
No way. It's not going to happen because Valdez came into the ring. They are signed, sealed, delivered to fight sometime in the summer, which is, I love that fight. Can we talk a little more about the controversy? The what did you take from that? The 28 seconds elapsed. A lot of different people out there responding to discussion I put on Twitter, which I love. That was a good discussion. There were, you know, I do know that it's not it's at the ref's discretion. It is what he thinks the 10 count is. But I will say it again. Like, I've never seen an additional 17 seconds. That's a lot of time. You know, spitting out the mouthpiece. Let's get into that. Spitting out the mouthpiece is a veteran move to survive. I've heard, oh, wow, that's wily. That's a vet move. That's crafty. But should he have been docked a point? If he's docked a point, that's even more time that he's given to recover. And Navarrete was going to try to get him out there, which he did. Spitting out of the mouthpiece, that's an old vet move, right?
Yeah, so there's a couple of vet moves when you got somebody hurt, and Tito Trinidad was really good at this. When he was hurt, he would hit you low. He would hit you low on purpose. And he did that in a bunch of fights. He did it with Vargas. So remember the Tito Trinidad-Vargas fight? Trinidad comes out, guns blazing, slips a jab, left hook, bang! Puts Vargas down immediately. Is basically going to finish him. Fernando Vargas, phenomenal talent at that time. I'm still undefeated at that point. Comes back, roars back, drops Trinidad. He gets up. He's starting to finish him. Trinidad, super bad low blow. Boom. Ref steps in, cuts him, breaks him. Ooh, gives him time to recover. He was buzzed. So I fought fighters before who have done that. I dropped a Puerto Rican fighter as well to the body several times, and I was going in for the finish, and he went with a very, very blatant low blow, which separates the time, gives you more time to recover. It's a veteran move. Listen, it's just part of the sport. It's a way to get more time. Spitting out mouthpiece is another one. Good, take a point. Listen, in my fight against Prodikov, I took a knee. I lost a point for that. Mm-hmm. I gave up a point because I knew I had a chance to fight back and gain my points back. If the fight ends there, if I get stopped, then the fight's over. I can't fight back from there. So I'd rather give up the point and be able to fight it on than the fight end right there. So yeah, that's just part of the rule set that fighters understand. So yeah, you go down, you take some extra time, you spit the mouthpiece out.
I think the referee did a pretty poor job. I think he should have definitely taken a point away. It was a very blatant spitting out of the mouthpiece. Like, I've seen it like fall out, and there are some times where it's accidental, or also times where it's less obvious. If the fighter is looking to buy some time, I think Navarrete was doing that. It was so obvious what he was doing there. So I think the referee messed up by not docking a point there.
You take two. You take 2 points. So what? He still knocked him out. Take two for being a blatant foul.
I've never seen that. Have you?
I've definitely seen that. Definitely seen that. Taking 2 points.
Pretty rare. No.
Very rare. Super rare. But it's at the referee's discretion. He could do that.
Referee,
but listen,
didn't do anything.
Muhammad Ali, when he got dropped by the Englishman, losing my mind. They cut his gloves in the corner. He gets dropped, goes down, is hurt bad, glassy eye.
Chavalo, right?
No, Englishman. Shoot.
What happened?
Anyway, so he gets dropped badly, glassy eyed, hurt bad, goes to the corner, hurt. Corner cuts the glove. They
Henry
have to
Cooper.
Change the glove. Henry Cooper, exactly. Yes. Englishman. So he ends up stopping Cooper on cuts over the eye a few rounds later.
Yeah.
They don't do that. He doesn't get that extra time. History is different. What does the referee do in that situation? I mean,
it's very easy to jump on the refs because we're watching from home. We have all these replays. We're given more, but they also have replay there too. They also have the commission there. Tough to make that decision.
So what do you do? Do you DQ him?
I think you take away a point from Navarrete, but I think he was fine.
But at the end, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It does take a point away, but Navarrete was going to come out and try to stop Wilson. But we didn't know that was going to happen. Like, Wilson ran out of steam, and he also was going to kick himself because I think he had Navarrete hurt, and he just – he wasn't as aggressive as he was early on in the fight. And I think that also has to do with Navarrete stepping up considerably with his punch output after he got dropped, but could have took away a point there. That would have been a 2-point swing, and maybe the fight plays out differently. I thought the referee did a poor job, not only not seeing the late shot. And that also is very like that's at the ref's discretion too. Like, I don't know if he hit him late on purpose. It was pretty close. It was like bang, bang. But when you watch the replay, it's like, all right, Wilson hit him late. And then Navarrete spits out his mouthpiece. Those two don't wipe each other out because the referee didn't acknowledge either of them. And those are points that fans were making after the fact. You know what I mean?
Hey, all fair points. All fair points. And, all that matters. But at the end of the day, it doesn't, because the result was the result. I just want to see him fight again. I thought it was a fun fight. And I think, I don't know, Wilson, I'd like to see him again no matter what. Guy obviously can fight. And he's got Navarrete's number at least to a some kind of degree.
Sure.
And
that was a nice compact left hand. That was such a nice
punch. Got a great left hand. He's got a great left hook. He throws it at the right time. It's very short. It's very hard. He's got a great body type for the weight class.
He'll be back. I think him, the B-sides this weekend. Liam Wilson, Erica Cruz. Made a mm-hmm. name for themselves this weekend.
Got to see them again. Yep.
Yeah. Real fight fans knew, even if the scorecards were really wide for Serrano Cruz and Wilson, obviously there were some cries that he was not dealt. He was dealt a bad hand, and odds were stacked against him, whether it was on the scales or whether it was in the ring. But now things move on. I mean, this is boxing. We move on to the next fight. It's Navarrete and Valdez. Valdez came into the ring after. I think Valdez is going to win pretty easily. I think Navarrete is too wild. He makes too many mistakes. Who knows about his weight? who knows if the power will continue to translate at 130, but that's like the least of his issues. I think he just so defensively inept or irresponsible defensively. I think Valdez is pretty technical and still has pretty good power. I like Valdez in that fight, but I think it will be an awesome fight.
Valdez is definitely very technical. You know, even though he throws wide punches, he sets them up really well. You know, he's got a great amateur background, a good pedigree. And I would agree with you on Evidente, but I've called so many of his fights and seen him firsthand, and I've not thought he was that great so many times, and then he just pulls it out because he's a great fighter. He's a fighter. You know, he's not the kind of style that I really like. He's not like a traditional boxer with good technique and, you know, slick and like Valdez. But I don't know. I think he can make it actually a really fight. I don't see Valdez winning easily. I always prefer the boxer over the puncher, but I think it's a great fight. It's a great Mexican matchup, and I think a lot of it is going to come down to that. The idea that it's the Mexican pride. How does that affect the mindset and the technique and the strategy of each fighter? Because I think that actually helps Navarrete and may hurt Valdez.
Well, you're talking about the machismo, right?
Right, exactly. And machismo, balls to balls.
That's like what Canelo was always getting knocked for early on in his career until the second Golovkin fight. Was like, right, oh, he doesn't fight like a Mexican, doesn't look like a Mexican, doesn't fight like a Mexican. The fans were like, we don't know about this guy. And then he stands in the center of the ring against Golovkin, walks him down, and then now he's obviously like 100% approval rate for the Mexican fans.
Well, that hurt Oscar De La Hoya too. Oscar De La Hoya was always seen as Mexican-American.
Yeah, because he spoke English.
He spoke English, but, you know, he spoke Spanish as well, too. I mean, he's fluent in Spanish as well. It's not like some of these guys who don't speak Spanish at all. But I remember that it was the Trinidad fight where he boxed, and everybody was like, he lost the fight because he boxed. He should have fought like a Mexican. And then he fought Shane Mosley, and he totally tried to fight him, and he loses. Like, if he would have boxed, he probably would have won the fight. Yeah, you can't do that. But listen, I mean, that happens in many boxers' careers. But, yeah, I think it's a great fight. I hope it happens.
Back to Oscar. Did you see
50?
You see his Instagram post? Saturday morning, open up Instagram. I'm not ashamed to say that when I wake up, I open up all the same apps everyone else does. I open up Instagram first thing in the morning. Boom! Oscar De La Hoya naked with a Ring magazine belt covering his junk with his CGI abs. I am 50. And shout out to him. He even said it in his caption. Never thought I'd make it to 40, let alone 50. We all know about the demons that Oscar De La Hoya has. But man, he is really showing off those abs. First thing in the morning, seeing Oscar De La Hoya fully naked is one way to wake up, let me tell you.
So I heard that he actually came out and said that he got like a procedure done.
Yeah, of course.
Ab etching. Well, we said that on air. I was like, there's no chance he literally just got those. But at least, you know, listen, if he's at least being forthright with it, yeah, good for him.
He's owning it. He's 50. He's had an awesome career. I think he's hilarious. I love his tweets. I love the things he says. He's just hilarious. He just is constant content. And he's on a mission, he says, this year to make the biggest fights. And happy birthday, Oscar. 50 years old, thirst trapping on the gram still. Love and life. I love Oscar De La Hoya. I've had him on the show a couple times. I think he's hilarious. So keep up.
Well, I mean, he's one of my inspirations growing up. So I know I get people love to hate on Oscar, but everyone forgets the heyday of Oscar De La Hoya when he was an absolute machine, destroying 30, 35, 40 pounders. Awesome. I think up until 147, he was unbeatable. So, you know, he was big, long, strong, could box, had power, never got tired. But yeah, no, he's one of the guys I grew up watching. It was like, this is how you box.
Well, so, there's no doubt about it. Like, I think that most fans.
No, there is a doubt about it. People forget. People.
No. People forget? It's because of the last 15, 20 years of promoter, post boxer De La Hoya, the antics, a lot of the stuff, becoming a promoter. And when you become a promoter, fight fans are immediately like, look at you differently because you're a promoter and you're not giving us the best fights and all that. But if you can separate two, post Oscar, post fighting career, like his personal life and issues and that, but in the ring, there was no doubt about it. He was the biggest star for like a solid 10 years. So there's no doubt about that.
Yeah. I mean, complete crossover star. He was the Golden Boy before, you know, Canelo, and or it was Golden Boy, it was Oscar, then Floyd, then Canelo. And it's just kind of the way it goes. Like, Floyd beat Oscar, became the Golden Boy. Beats Canelo, even though they fought, but then Canelo took over a little bit while after that. You know, Sugar Ray Leonard before that, Roy Jones, Oscar De La Hoya, Mike Tyson. So you got these guys that are those guys, and Oscar used to be one of those guys. So I think people forget that.
I know we're getting off the path here. Canelo is obviously the guy, but he's, you know, he's over his 30s. Who's the next big star?
Shakur Stevenson.
Yep. Tank Ryan, I think. Someone emerges of those three.
Yeah, I think it's Shakur. I think he's the most sturdy of the group in terms of and talent. I think that kid is just locked in. I think he's so locked in. And I think that's the biggest thing. And that's been the difference with the 35-pounders recently. Is Devin Haney's locked in. He's elevating past his talent level. His potential is so much higher because of this, mm-hmm. where guys are killing themselves because of this. You know, the head, for those of who are just listening, I'm pointing to my head. Right. You know, the Teofimo Lopez, like, he's got all the talent in the world, but he's having a lot of trouble outside of the ring. Yep. Right. Above the shoulders, there's a problem. And he's getting surpassed by these guys who are more locked in. And I think Shakur Stevenson has that. He's got that Floyd Mayweather. He's got that Andre Ward. He's got that mentality. And that all comes from the headspace and being locked in and focused.
Speaking of Teofimo, final fight that we will discuss, a potential Teofimo opponent. Arnold Barboza picked up a win over Jose Pedraza. Really good fight. Close fight.
Good fight.
Didn't catch fire like maybe we thought it would, but it was competitive. I think the scorecards were like 96-94. Very close fight. Like,
I think it was two-time 96-94 and then 97-93.
And like it wasn't like an uproar from fans being like, that's not the right scorecard. That was a pretty accurate scorecard.
Yep.
I thought Barboza won. And we saw what we usually see. Solid fighter, like you said last week. Solid fighter, nothing more, nothing less. He doesn't have that real second gear, but he's very sound. Got a good jab, active, very athletic, power decent. Pedraza gave him issues. I think once Pedraza, he gave up a lot of rounds early. Once Pedraza moved to southpaw, he had a lot of success. And I bet you he wishes he did that earlier in the fight. But Barboza wins. And then I think the fight to make now is Barboza-Teofimo. I mean, it's just perfect fight. If Teofimo's not going to fight Progre, Barboza wants that fight, like it. That's the fight that should be next.
Yeah, I mean, it's been talked about for a while now. I think Barboza's been calling him out. And I thought that was a good first fight for Teofimo at 140. To go right to Barboza. I thought stylistically it would be a good matchup for Teofimo. Granted, Barboza is way bigger. He is a big 40 pounder, and Teofimo, we have learned, he has not grown into 140 at all. He's still a 35 pounder fighting up, but he still has enough talent and skill. Like you said, he's got that wow that Barboza does not. Barboza is solid, he's physically strong, he's big. But I was talking to somebody before this fight with Pedraza, and I was saying, I'm like, he should win. He's bigger, he's younger, he's fresher. Pedraza has a lot of talent. It's a big win for him. But I think he's going to win, and it's still not going to turn heads. You know, even beating a guy like Pedraza, who's a two-division world champion, and has been doing really well at 140, I don't think it's going to get a lot of attention, because it's just the way that Barboza fights and the way that he wins. It's just not eye-catching. He needs a fight, like a Teofimo fight. And if he can get a win there, he can get attention.
Now we're talking. I think that's a perfect fight for both guys. And
both guys,
We thought that Teofimo Barboza is a perfect fight for Lopez's first foray to 140. Top Rank thought otherwise, and they obviously made the right call, because we saw Teofimo... first fight was, I forgot, who was his first fight at 140 against?
He fought that really tough Mexican kid, and he looked good. He had trouble hurting the kid, and then finally stopped him mid-late. And then the Martin fight
was not Teofimo. No bueno. Not look good. He's kind of backed himself into a corner, Teofimo. Obviously not going to fight Progre. Don't think he's ready to fight Progre anyway. Barboza will stand right there in front of him. He doesn't have a lot of power. Like, Teofimo should be able to get back on track, you would think, against a fighter like Barboza. I think that's a perfect summer fight between the two of them at 140, a division that we got Progre up at the top of it, and there's a lot of other moving parts going on at 140. So That's what's going on at 140. I do believe that that fight did get lost in the sauce because it wasn't exciting. It wasn't, there wasn't any knockdowns in it. Good fight,
good,
solid
good matchup
fight.
And good fight. Yeah.
Right, but the main event in that own card, Wilson and Navarrete, then what we saw from the women's side, like kind of pushed it down. But I think Barboza Teofimo, that should be next.
I agree with you. I think that's a logical next step for both guys. More so now than ever. I mean, before it seemed like it made sense for Teofimo, and it obviously would be good for Barboza, but now like it makes sense for both guys in terms of because it's not a guaranteed fight for either guy. Barboza wins, it propels his career. Teofimo wins, he should win if he's going to still campaign at 140. So
if Teofimo wins and gets a knockout, I'm not saying he will get that. If Teofimo wins, that I think sets up for a pro grade fight. Because that would be three fights at 140 for Teofimo at that point. And over a top 10 guy in Barboza. Like we said, it's all above the shoulders, though, Teofimo. Richard Torres fought on this card. Picked up another win, first round. Guy's interesting. You know, is very interesting guy outside of the ring. But we're seeing him inside the ring. That was over on ESPN. Undercard on Matchroom, Richardson Hitchens. Nice win over Bowser. I think Hitchens is now a player at 140.
Definitely. He was the most talented person on the card last night in the Garden. He boxed really, really well.
Good job.
I've worked with him a ton when we were in Brooklyn. We sparred a bunch of times. He has really gotten much, much better in the last couple of years. He's grown into himself. He's a full-fledged junior welterweight now. He's big for the weight class. That was the thing. Bowser's in the wrong weight class. He looked like a 30-pounder in there. And Hitchinson looked like a full-fledged junior welter, looked strong. He's tall, he's long, uses that jab, does not deter from the jab. I think he could have got Bowser out of there if he put some combination together. But he's not a combination puncher. He's a jabber. He's a one-twoer.
Yep.
But all in all, I mean, super sharp, took no damage, very, very smart boxing. I think his potential is especially these last couple fights, is really growing. And yeah, like you said, he's a player at 40 for as long as he can make the weight, because
there's
he's
a
really
lot
big.
Of good fighters at 40. I mean, there's a lot of good fighters at 40. So
he could be the sleeper, though. He could be a dark horse of the division. Guys are not.
I heard,
you know,
before they were going to put Hitchens in there with Montana Love, despite Love losing.
He beats Love.
Technical fight.
Say it right now. He beats Love. From what I've seen from Montana Love, especially in the last couple of fights, Hitchens, I think, is just a different type of fighter.
Good weekend of fights. That was a good weekend. Busy one. A lot. Friday and Saturdays are always fun. Watching both of them are hard if you have significant others or a life. It's tough to get to all of them. That's why we got you covered here on these weekend recap episodes. What's going on the rest of the week for you, Chris?
I am going. I got Pro Box this week, so we have a great fight coming from Mexico City with Juan Manuel Marquez's promotion with a bunch of his fighters down there.
We're heading to Mexico City.
Yeah, this is the life I live, man. I travel. There's nothing.
You head down to Mexico City with Juan Manuel Marquez.
It's my guy.
That's gonna be awesome. You should take a lot of videos, put them on Twitter. Behind the scenes stuff.
I don't think I'm allowed.
Do a couple shots at tequila with Marquez.
Well, that's for sure. I don't know if Juan drinks like that. I mean, he has to drink
some tequila.
Yeah, you're right. I'm being silly.
Is Claudia Trejos going to be there?
She will.
She drinks.
She does. Yeah,
she smokes cigars.
Her and I will be smoking cigars and drinking tequila.
She's
sure.
Awesome. She is.
Actually, we're more like a whiskey scotch.
Okay.
More whiskey scotch cigars.
She's so much fun on the road. She will hang.
Oh, she's
with
the best.
Boys, and that's awesome. So keep an eye on Pro Box, and we'll have you covered. We'll have another episode later in the week talking about – we'll get to the Plant Benavides press conference on our next episode. There's some fights too at 130. Oshaki Foster versus Vargas. That's for our 130 pounds over on Showtime. Should be some fight announcements too. But that's it. That's our show this week. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. As always, keep your hands up. Protect yourselves at all times. Don't spit out your mouthpiece. And stay out of those DMs. Yeah.
Unless you need to.